Yud Zayin Sivan, Thursday the 4th of June, Rabbi Yaakov ben Zaken, Aloysacho, the turning point.
Good morning, everyone. I want to share with you almost nothing here is original. I'm going to share with you, but Torah is not always original. It's original how we interpret it. It's original how we internalize it. And there is, I'm not sure how many there are, but there is a few recordings online of Rav Soloveitchik himself giving shiur. And this is one famous shiur that he gave. It's called Nosim Anachnu.
Which one? The GB?
Yes. You can find it on either the YU Torah website, or I think I found the ones in Torah anytime. It's a fascinating shiur on Parshat Be'alosma. And his question at the beginning of the Parsha is a very strong question. The question is, he believes that there's a principle that he calls the unity of Torah. And he says the unity of Torah means that when you look at the Torah, when you run and we learn through the Torah, things must flow. There has to be a unity in the text, in the storyline. Things have to flow from one another. We're not here talking about darshin smuchin, that's halachic issue. We're talking about there must be a theme running through. And he says if you look at Parshat Be'alosta, it seems a little bit haphazard. It seems that things are not necessarily well connected with each other. So he says, let's take a look and try and understand how things are connected in the Parsha. So I wrote a short summary of the events of the Parsha. Now he says actually the first paragraph of Parsha, in our Parsha, Be'alosta, that really he says belongs to the previous Parsha. But when you start off Kaches Alvim, that's the first one where you have the Pidyon Alvim with the Bechairas and the assignment, the appointment of the Levim and the consecration, the Kiddush Alvim. The next thing we have is Pesach Sheni. As Moshe Rabbeinu introduces the idea of Pesach Sheni through the people's request, then we move on to Al Pi Hashem Yisau Ve Al Pi Hashem Yachanu. The fact that when they journey through the desert, the Midbar, they're journeying Al Pi Hashem based on what the Amud He'anar, the Amud Esh, guiding them, and that would determine whether they had to move, they had to camp. Next is a parenthetical parsha, it seems. Yisro shows up in the picture. We're not really sure from where. We're not really sure what happens at the end. It's one of the most enigmatic paragraphs in the parsha. Yisro shows up and has a conversation with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu tries to convince him to come and join us to go into Eretz Yisrael. And Yisro says, no, I'm going back to my hometown. And then Moshe Rabbeinu says, but one second, we're going to Eretz Yisrael. And you know, the greatness, the goodness that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising to us, we're going to give you. And what does Yisro answer? We don't know. The Torah leaves it open-ended. There's no answer to Yisro. From Yisro, sorry. We move on to Vayhi bin So Ha'aron, the inverted nuns, which we all try and figure out what exactly is there. But we know that it's this part of the inverted nuns are like parentheses. And these parentheses show us that this parsha doesn't really belong here. Not supposed to be here. So one second, I don't understand. Why put it here if it doesn't belong here? Instead of putting it with parentheses, just don't put it here. Put it in the right place. Why is it put here with an indication that it doesn't belong here? Next is we have the Misoinanim, which the first part is also very, very intriguing. We're not really sure what they were complaining about. Then we have the Asafsus Asher Bekirbo, his Abu Taiva. I saw Rabbi Levi spoke about his Abu Taiva. Okay. Did he speak about the Lashon his Abu Taiva?
Yes.
So we won't go into that. And then Moshe Rabbeinu, for one of the very few times that he turns to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Lam ha re'osa le'avdecha, he takes it personally. He says, why did you do this to me? To put this burden of the people on top of me, what am I supposed to do now? Anochi arisi es ha'am hazeh, anochi elitihu. What am I, a suckling mother? Am I carrying a little baby in my bosom? Is that what I'm supposed to do? Next we have Eldad Umeidad Misnavi Memachane. What does that have to do with anything? Why not? Why Dafka now that takes place? Next is the Slab, which is the answer, so to speak, to the Hisabu Taiva. And then we see how the amounts were incredible, and they gathered, and the way they gathered. And for the end of the parsha, we have the episode of Miriam. And that finishes off the parsha. So what's running through? What's the theme here? Says of Soloveitchik, a powerful idea. He says, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu that he was taking Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim, he told him, "Behotziyacha es ha'am mi Mitzrayim, ta'avdun es ha'elokim al ha'har hazeh." When you take out Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim, there's a purpose. The purpose is, "Ta'avdun es ha'elokim al ha'har hazeh." You come to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this mountain. Interesting. Serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the mountain. What kind of service, what kind of avodah was there at Ma'amad Har Sinai? But there's an avodah that's supposed to take place at Har Sinai. What is that avodah? So he brings in the name of the chinuch. There's two sides, there's two aspects, two steps to this avodah. The first one is Kabbalah Satorah itself. The Ma'amad Har Sinai with Kabbalah Satorah, Kabbalah Satorah, accepting the Torah, that's one of the aspects of Ta'avdun Es Elokim Al Ha'arazeh. What's the second? He says the second is the Binyan HaMishkan. Preparing for the Avodah and starting the Avodah in the Mishkan, that was the Ta'avdun Es Elokim Al Ha'arazeh. They were doing at the foot of the mountain. So says Rav Soloveitchik, once these two things were in place, once Ta'avdun Es Elokim Al Ha'arazeh had fully materialized, then we need to move on to the Hevesi Eschem El Ha'aretz. We've already done Ve'otseiti Ve'itzalti Ve'ga'alti Ve'lakachti Eschem Li Le'am Ve'iti Lachem Le'lokim. We've already done all the four. Now we need to go to the fifth. The fifth. Now, Ve'hevesi Eschem El Ha'aretz. What's fascinating about this year, I recommend you listen to it, is to hear. From what I heard, I don't know if anybody here had the pleasure of meeting him personally. I never had the pleasure of meeting him personally. But from what I hear, he was very much of an intellectual. And I don't quite imagine him being an emotional person. And if you listen to the Shir, you feel the emotion. You feel how he's reading the Torah. He says you have to read the Torah not just with your mind. You have to learn the Psukim and read the story, not just intellectually, but you have to find the emotions and feel what's happening. And he says, if you look at the parsha, what strikes is that there seems to be at the very beginning a very, very strong emotion of momentum. It's like things are happening. And Levim, you appoint the Levim, and that, as you know, it was miraculous how quick it was that they did the Hanafa of the Levim. Then, basically, we're ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. We're ready. Let's go. Let's move. I can't. We can't. Why? Because look at the chronology. They finished building the Mishkan on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Then they had the Nesim brought their korbanos, their offerings, all the way through Yud Beis Nisan. So really now we're sitting at Yud Gimel Nisan. So in as much as we want to go into Eretz Yisrael right now, we can't. Because Pesach. 2 days Pesach. So therefore Pesach Sheni is introduced. Now that's the only thing that's stopping us from going. The only thing that's stopping us from entering, journeying into the land. As he calls it, marching into the Eretz Yisrael. The only thing that's stopping us right now is Pesach. We have to put a hold. But otherwise, we discuss Pesach happens. And there, okay, so let's see. Al pi Hashem yachanu, al pi Hashem yisa. Okay, let's talk about the moving. Let's talk about going in. How are we going to march in? Until now, we were basically running away from the midstream. And then going to Har Sinai. But this march is not a march towards Har Sinai. This is not a march to get to the Torah. This is a march into Eretz Yisrael. So even though we're talking about marching in the desert, we're not really talking about marching in the Midbar. We're talking about marching through into Eretz Yisrael. And this is Al Pi Hashem Yachanu, Al Pi Hashem Yisrael. And then, because we're talking about marching into Eretz Yisrael, we have to speak about the Chatzos first. The Chatzos was what gathered the people. And what we have Simchas and Moadim, what are we going to do? This is the trumpets, the bugles, right? The bugles that are sounded, and you just hear the bugles. You hear the noise, and you hear the excitement. We're going in. And that's why the camping, this is a different camping, this is how we're going into Eretz Yisrael. And therefore he says, when it comes to the Parsha of Yisroel, we're reading here a conversation between Moshe, the son-in-law, with his father-in-law. He says, but you have to read beyond that. He says, really, what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing here is making an open invitation for the nations of the world. He's saying, we're going into Eretz Yisrael. We're ushering the Messianic era, the Bias HaMashiach. Moshe Rabbeinu, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have brought Klal Yisrael into Eretz Yisrael, that would have been Bias HaMashiach. They would have built the Beis HaMikdash, Moshe Rabbeinu would be the Melech HaMashiach, and we would have fulfilled the purpose of the world through Moshe Rabbeinu. So they were at the verge, not just of leaving the desert, not just of entering Eretz Yisrael. We were at the verge of bringing Mashiach here. And this is the tone of the Parsha. And therefore he says, the Hayah HaTov HaHuud is going to be so much bounty, so much blessing, so much bracha. Not the bracha that happened when Yeshua came in. That bracha was limited. That bracha was not the bracha of Eretz Yisrael in Tkufas HaMashiach. The bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu is inviting Yisro and, so to speak, the entire world to come and partake in is a bracha of Bnei Yisrael going into Eretz Yisrael and Bias Mashiach. That's why he's asking them. And really that's what we should have been. And therefore, the Parsha Vayhi Bimtzoa HaAron, which is there, should have been there. Had they not sinned, had they not been the Parsha of the Mishayinim and then the Asafs of the Kibros HaTaifa, then Vayhi Bimtzoa HaAron, that godless of Vayhi Bimtzoa HaAron, would have been there. So therefore, the reason it's there with the brackets is, I want to show you what would have been. I want to show you the godless of what could have been if you hadn't spoiled it. And that's why it stays there, but it's out of place. So we have to put the inverted moons to show that. Kivros HaTaiva. This, when Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why are you doing this to me? I can't. Did I give birth to this nation? Here Rav Soloveitchik gets very emotional. And the reason I think he gets very emotional, I think he empathizes with Moshe Rabbeinu. As a leader of Klal Yisrael, he empathizes with Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, and I can tell you, as a somebody who worked in the world of Kiruv, working for JLE and then before in California for many years, you sign up for Kiruv when you're in Kol Yisrael because you want to teach Torah. That's what you want to do. And I'm sure people who are in Rabbanos do the same thing. They want to become Rabbanim because they want to teach Torah. But alongside with teaching Torah comes a lot of pastoral care. A lot of caring about people. A lot of looking after simple things. And just showing love to people, which has nothing to do with teaching Torah that we were thinking about. But Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, took the job, quote unquote, to teach Torah. And here he finds himself with these naughty people who are sinking into Kibros HaTaiva, who are sinking into the Taiva to a level. He says, Avodah Zarah you can deal with. Avodah Zarah you can deal with. But paganism, which is a pursuit of hedonism, which is what Klal Yisrael demonstrated here, that is very, very hard to deal with. And that Moshe Rabbeinu says, what am I supposed to do here? And Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, lifts his arm and says, I can't. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, Esali Shivi Mish Mizitnei Yisrael. You know what? Let's share some of the responsibility and share some of the burden. Right? Because Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't. As we continue, so this is really, he says, this is the turning point of the Parsha. Kibros HaTaiva is the turning point. Here is where we realize we can't really march into Eretz Yisrael so quickly. We're not ready to march in. Once this happens, you have Eldad Umeidad Misnavim Bamachane. And now we understand why. Because only now, what were the Misnavim? Moshe Meis, Yeshua Machnisam La'aretz. This is the point of failure. We're used to thinking that the Meraglim is the point, is the turning point. That's where the fate is sealed. But really the problem starts here. And really here is already downhill. Here we lost the momentum. Here we lost that journey, that Nos'im Anachnu. He points out, when he tells Yisro Nos'im Anachnu, Nos'im is present continuous. We're journeying. It's not about we're going to go. Nos'im, can you feel? We're going. We're on the way. We're entering. We're marching into Eretz Yisrael. But here it stops. And therefore, Eldad Umeidad, for the first time, they have a nevuah that Moshe Meis. This is not going to happen. We thought we were going in with Moshe Rabbeinu. We thought it would be Tkufas HaMashiach right away. We lost it. And then, Miriam. How does Miriam's episode fit in? Miriam's episode fits in because when Moshe Rabbeinu has now taken, has been given by HaKadosh Baruch Hu the full responsibility of looking after Klal Yisrael as a mother looks after her children. Moshe Rabbeinu has to become now the father and the mother of Klal Yisrael. And when you become the father or the mother of Klal Yisrael fully, you don't have a family. You have to give up your family. At the level of Moshe Rabbeinu, you have to give up your family. And Aaron and Miriam couldn't understand this. They thought it was mitzad the nevuah, mitzad the kedusha of Moshe. They said, we also have, Logan Bano Diber, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also spoke to us. So how come you feel that you have to detach yourself from your wife and that's the normal thing? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, Lochen Avdi Moshe, Bechol Beisi Ne'eman Hu. Bechol Beisi is my house, he's part of my house. He's looking after my kids. He's looking after my kids in a way that no one else did and probably no one else will do. And when you become that type of leader like Moshe at that level, then everyone's your family, but no one's your particular family. He points out that when the Torah says Ve'ele told us Aaron u'Moshe, we see that the Torah mentions the sons of Aaron. What about the sons of Moshe? It doesn't mention the sons of Moshe. The sons of Moshe don't appear. If you look in the census, We saw B'nai Merari. Where is Moshe's sons? Where are Moshe's sons? They're not there. In the Torah, we speak about Moshe having children, but then we never speak about the children of Moshe. We never speak about the descendants of Moshe. We never speak about how Moshe fits into the whole, how Moshe's family fits into the rest of life. That we don't see that. See, it's because Moshe Rabbeinu, so to speak, doesn't have a family. His family is Klal Yisrael. And that's why Miriam was criticizing, so to speak, but Miriam didn't quite understand this level at which Moshe Rabbeinu became the Av Shel Kol Yisrael. The Av and the aim of Klal Yisrael. And that's why the punishment of Miriam is so strong and so unexpected. Because what she's failed to understand the complete difference that exists with Moshe Rabbeinu, not just in the level of Nevuah, the level of Nevuah was required for the function that Moshe Rabbeinu was fulfilling. The function of being Rabban, Avihen, and Imam Shel Klal Yisrael, basically. He was taking off that tremendous responsibility. So he basically had to leave his family and be left without. I want to add, I don't know if I'll be overlapping with Rabbi Levi, but Rav Soloveitchik explains what the depth of the problem of Kibros HaTaiva, his Avu Taiva. Actually, this he doesn't say, but to be Misave a Taiva let me ask you, if you, I don't know if he's, did he speak about the fact that you, the man, you couldn't see the food itself?
No.
No? Okay, so I'll tell you how I understand this parsha. He's Abu Taifa. You know, so we know there's Midrashim that say that if you wanted the man to taste like anything you wanted, it would taste like that thing. So I don't understand, so what's their complaint? Why do they, what's their complaint? It's man, but man can be anything. Okay, so some Farshim say, depending on your level of tzitkus, you could or you couldn't do this. But assuming that you could make it taste whatever you wanted, so what's lacking, what's missing? And the answer is, the taiva of it is missing. Because if you look at a steak, and you see it sizzling in front of you, right? And it's calling out, eat me. Right? The appetite, the desire that you have because you see it, increases tremendously the pleasure you have once you eat it. The pleasure can only be as strong as your desire before the pleasure. If you don't have, if you're not hungry, a steak doesn't taste very well. You first have to be hungry. Then you have to see it. Then it has to come in through your eyes. And then you have to desire it. When you desire it and then you eat it, that's a schmuck. They were complaining, you've taken away our stimuli. There's no stimulants around us. I can't have taiva for food anymore. How am I supposed to have taiva? I look at this piece of dough. Dough-looking thing. White dough-looking thing. And even if I imagine that it tastes like anything, but before I put it in my mouth, I don't have any appetite. So I have to imagine what it looks like. Yeah, but that is not enough. That doesn't give me the desire. And therefore what they said was, we are missing the taiva. We have a taiva to have a taiva. We are missing in having a desire. We don't have the opportunity to create that desire because we don't have anything that we can see. And therefore you have to give him real, quote unquote, meat. And the way they reacted, you see, Hamamait Asaf Asara Hamarim. The one who took a little bit, he took huge amounts, the piles. You know why? Because when you look with your eyes, when you desire, have you seen some people when they go to a buffet, simcha? Have you seen what they do? They take two plates, they pretend that one's for the wife and one's for themselves, right? They pile them, that's when they sit together. They pile up both plates, they sit down and they start pressing, right? Most of the time they don't finish both of them. Why? Because the eyes are much bigger than the stomach. But that's the desire. You look at it, you just want to have it, right? When they went out to collect, they collected so much. They collected much more than they could handle. Because they went crazy. For the first time, they actually see the thing itself. How would they more and more and more? That's where the desire comes in. And they had a chance to, so to speak, bring back the desire. But that was the downfall. The downfall is that's a pagan lifestyle. It's not about desire. But desire has a little bit of ruchnius to it. This is mamash paganism. This is speaking to the body, to the complete neglect of the neshama. This was the downfall. So really, even though Beha'aloscha seems like, so first of all, you see now how everything ties in together. Basically, the beginning of the parsha is, We're going. Everything's ready. What do we need in order to get there? And then we have the Vayibin Sa, which is the last part, and then Misoyinim, and forwards. That's the downfall. And even though we thought, as I said, we thought that Shelach Lecha is really the turning point. That's just the ceiling of the Gzeira. But everything started over here. Here is where Moshe Meisa Yeshua Machnisa Laaretz, and that's why this parsha is so crucial. I'm sorry I'm 5 minutes early. But nobody complained last time I spoke a bit less. So I hope you have a great day. And when you read the parsha now, it has a better feel of unity, and you really see the progression. And you, as you read it, take it in emotionally. Try and feel what it was like to be excited to go into Eretz Yisrael. The real Ruchnisdike taiva was the taiva of going into Eretz Yisrael. And that taiva, basically, that fell, and that disappointment and that change, the turning point, emotions of the parsha that happens in the middle. Have a great week. Thank you.